Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Tonight in Your Legal Rights, well, let's take a step back. In the not-so-distant past, we looked at the system of immigration, that is, humanity versus the system to which we control immigration into this country. Since that time, deportations have ramped up, and it seems that while the administration speaks of criminals, they've cast a net that catches innocents alike. Are these deportations limited to the undocumented or to serious criminals? Just where are we now, and why should we care? Isn't the fight for immigrant and refugee rights a forgotten part of the right for racial justice? If you care, what can you do about it? If you've been caught up in this mess, perhaps you have a years-old conviction. What can you do about it? We're going to talk about something that affects thousands of lives in California, but doesn't always get the attention it deserves: post-conviction relief. Tonight, we're focusing on post-conviction relief that's specific to non-citizens. We have a show coming up toward the end of the month that looks at a broader swipe of post-conviction relief. And in this arena, there's much to discuss. As always, you may call regarding any question on tonight's topic, and we're talking about immigration and post-conviction relief. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And yes, we'd like you, our most important guest, to join in the conversation, so do call in. And bear in mind that our attorney guests can't provide you precise legal advice, as they don't have all of the facts relating to your case, but they're happy to pass along legal principles to help assist you in your decision-making. And their legal guidance mayn't be the position of their employers or clients. They're here to help. They're here to help you out. Do feel free to give us a call. Joining us tonight, Carla Gomez has been the Private Defender Program's in-house attorney focused on the intersection of criminal and immigration law, including post-conviction relief, as she previously did as a senior staff attorney in the San Francisco office of the Immigrants Legal Resource Center. Ms. Gomez co-authored California Post-Conviction Relief for Immigrants, How to Use the Criminal Courts to Erase the Immigration Consequences of Crimes, published by the ILRC, first edition, 2023. Carla has over 20 years of criminal defense experience as both a federal and county public defender, and has extensive experience as an immigration defense attorney. Redwood City attorney John Halley, he's been an attorney for some 40 years. He's been practicing criminal defense in a number of capacities. At the trial level, where he's defended murder and even serial murder cases. As an appellate attorney, where he's argued over 250 cases on appeal. As well as representing clients seeking post-conviction relief by instruments such as those which we're going to be discussing here tonight. And without further ado, Carla, John, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
You know, let me start with Carla. We spoke of this before going on the air, Carla. You shared with me a story that might illustrate the kinds of things we're talking about here and give some real life to this story. Perhaps you could share that story and maybe explain why people should care.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to explain a little bit about the deportation proceedings and what that looks like. So first of all, when someone is placed in deportation proceedings, they're not entitled to an attorney. It's almost impossible to win your case without an attorney. And in fact, you have you're seven times more likely to win your case with an attorney than without one. There was a judge in San Francisco, an immigration judge, and she used to say that deportation proceedings are like traffic court. You know, the rules of evidence don't apply. You're not entitled to an attorney. And yet it is literally a traffic court with the death penalty because the consequences of deportation are so severe. Many individuals return to countries that they've never even stepped foot in or left as infants or children. And in this country, in 1996, we expanded the list of crimes that subject someone to deportation. So as you stated, lawful permanent residents who perhaps pick up an old drug case or they've had an old drug conviction, even just for being under the influence of drugs, that would subject someone to deportation and subject them to mandatory detention. So I just want to highlight one story. I had a client who was actually from Cambodia, and he was born in a Thai refugee camp because his parents had escaped the genocide in Cambodia under the Khmer Rouge. So he came to this country, to the United States, when he was only 5 months old. He became a lawful permanent resident. He came as a refugee and became a lawful permanent resident. He was raised in Stockton. He married. He had a child, and he worked at an Amazon warehouse. And by all accounts, he was a loving father and husband. But he landed in ICE custody after pleading guilty to a misdemeanor, cultivation of marijuana. Now, this doesn't seem like a very serious offense. However, for immigration, it is an aggravated felony. So what does that mean? When aggravated felony carries the most draconian immigration consequences, he was subject to mandatory ICE detention, which means he couldn't post bond in immigration court. He was subject to mandatory deportation, which means that the judge couldn't consider his strong ties to the United States. He had to deport him, and a lifetime banishment from the United States. He spent 3 years in ICE detention fighting his deportation until he was able to find an attorney, and I was able to vacate his conviction, and he was able to terminate his immigration proceedings. And he was fortunate that California has really been at the forefront of post-conviction relief, understanding that lawyers have gotten it wrong for so long. And I just want to, if I could just highlight one thing, that this is not post-conviction relief because you're going to be deported. The reason that we have these post-conviction laws is because there was a very, there was the actual conviction is invalid because there was a constitutional right that was violated. And in this case, this was not a knowing and voluntary plea. He had no idea that this relatively minor offense would subject him to this very draconian immigration consequence. And the lawyer was ineffective. Pursuant to the Sixth Amendment, we're so lucky that we're in California and we've had this obligation. Defense attorneys must give this very specific advisal of the immigration consequences of a plea. In this case, the lawyer failed to do that. And in addition, the lawyer failed to try to negotiate for an immigration-neutral offense, which is also mandated by the law in California. And in 2010, this was expanded under a case called Padilla versus Kentucky, which means that the Sixth Amendment now applies to every state, every defense attorney, no matter what state you're in, has to give a very specific advisal to their client. And in that case, it's a great case to read because it actually talks about how serious the consequences are and how closely tied it is to the immigration consequences, and how sometimes someone, it's more important for them not to lose their entire life here in the United States, permanent family separation, than to spend a little bit more time in custody.
The story you just told is remarkably similar to one that I experienced not long before you came to the private defender. We had a case where another attorney had been representing this young man. Very parallel. He came over as a baby. And the difference, what separates his story out, is that the lawyer gave him no immigration advice because at the time of his plea, he believed he was a United States citizen, that he was born here, as he was told his entire life. He had no idea that he came over at some months of age from Mexico. No idea. He'd lived here his entire life. He spoke only English. He'd never seen Mexico since he was a baby. He was carried. And on the one hand, the attorney was willing to fall on his sword, but the attorney, given the information he had, because that's my understanding, is it's question one that we ask our clients is if they're a citizen. With that belief, he didn't do anything wrong. He was not only arrested, he had a very minor drug possessory offense. He had drugs in a bindle in his wallet and was given diversion, which in those days was deferred entry of judgment. You meant you enter a plea and they set your case aside and you do your stuff right and nothing happens, except that he got invited. Immigration invited him to come for an interview, and here the guy gets this invitation. He doesn't even know that he is the subject of the interview. He goes there, they sit him down, they confirm his name and put him in handcuffs. And it took me 8 months to get that plea set aside on sufficient constitutional grounds that got him out.
That would be a Fifth Amendment violation because he didn't meaningfully understand the consequence of the plea, and because he didn't understand that he thought he was a U.S. citizen. But yes, that would be a ground to vacate if it's a Fifth Amendment violation. And I just want to tell you, Jeff, that this does not just for our non-citizens. Post-conviction relief extends to all citizens. Of course, the consequences sometimes are more serious for our non-citizen clients, but every citizen is entitled to have a knowing and voluntary plea under the Fifth Amendment. And when someone doesn't understand that, whether it's because their lawyer failed to advise them of the immigration consequence, or if they failed to try to negotiate for an immigration-neutral offense, that is not a knowing and voluntary plea. So it's a violation of their Fifth Amendment. And anyone can vacate their conviction for a constitutional ground. If your lawyer is ineffective, so unfortunately, because this is a very complicated area of law, and it's very counterintuitive, like who would think that a misdemeanor cultivation of marijuana is something considered classified as an aggravated felony and you're going to suffer the worst immigration consequences, or that if you plead your client to being under the influence that you are going to be subject to mandatory, you know, ICE detention, deportation, and you'll be found inadmissible. These are very counterintuitive laws, and yet the defense attorney has this obligation under the Sixth Amendment to do the research and find out what the consequence is and then give the specific advisal. And I just want to highlight that the California legislature has recognized how complicated this is. And because of that, we have all of this great post-conviction relief to undo all the harms that defense attorneys have been doing for years and years, even though the obligation has been there since 1987. And of course, Padilla, made this a federal law.
You mentioned how complicated it is. I've learned that you can often plea to the exact same offense, but the wording that's used can be very harmful. And better still, some of these offenses, some of these criminal charges carry more than one way to get there. And if you're not careful about how you word it, it can lead to a very different place.
Really into the weeds now, Jeff, because that's something, whether it's called an indivisible or divisible offense. But I think we should turn it over to John Howie.
I wasn't going to go to say divisible or really tell about what that means. Just that it's a very concrete, it's a very complicated area of the law. And if it was always the same, it would be much easier to manage. But the fact is, it's changing very rapidly, and it's always changing very rapidly. And that's why, as a defense attorney, we need to reach out to somebody to get advice almost on every single case. And a case that I had a year ago might not lead me to the same result with the same charges today.
That's correct. The law changes. And something that may have been immigration neutral, meaning it was not an inadmissible or deportable offense a year ago, well, the court may have find that this year, if they review that statute, that it is, in fact, a deportable offense. It does change.
And of course, even if the court says it's okay here, another court may disagree. So one of the things that sometimes we have to tell people is, you're good, don't leave California. But let me shift gears a bit. I want to bring John in on the conversation. John, you've heard a couple examples now of how non-citizens can be totally blindsided for different reasons and find themselves, because of this, in a very different position than perhaps a citizen would have been.
Yeah, I've been doing this work for about 15 years. I started doing this before there was a good mechanism to get good results. And I've probably done 100 of these motions, and they range from sometimes, you know, quite significant offenses, people that did misbehave when they were young, and now they need to unwind that to try to protect their life here. But also things that border on the ridiculous. I have a guy who's in deportation proceedings because he sold counterfeit CDs. And nobody here in this state or in this court system regards that as a significant problem. But the federal law is extremely rigid and completely indifferent to the passage of time or any issue about retroactivity or whether or not this guy had any warning that admitting that he sat on a sidewalk and sold phony CDs or copied CDs, that could cause him to be removed from the United States. So there's a large population of people who have been living under a cloud for many years from some conviction of which they didn't recognize its seriousness at the time they had it, and neither did their lawyer. So that they now need to take the initiative and contact the lawyer to start the process of going back and unwinding that. And California law has become extremely helpful in this subject matter, and it now is in most cases possible to get results and cure the problem of some old conviction that in many cases has kept somebody from getting a good night's sleep since the time they were 22 years old. So that's the work, this particular part of my work that's focused on this. That's what it's about. It's trying to help those people.
And similarly, some of these folks are here legally for a long, long time. They didn't enter illegally. They did it all right. They've been living here for generations. And yet someone at some level looked under a rock and said, here's something that you had when you were a teenager.
Well, it gets quite complicated. And, you know, I should mention that an immigration professor once said to me, never trust your intuition about immigration, because it just doesn't make any sense from a distance. And so, you know, what we have here is an immigration lawyer and a criminal lawyer talking about this same problem, but we see it from, you know, opposite ends of the same pipe. And there's a few people like Carla that really are expert now in both of these things. But we criminal attorneys, we completely depend on the good offices and the advice of good immigration attorneys to give us the advice about what is a safe outcome for a client in this kind of case.
And to be clear, not all criminal attorneys, not all criminal defense attorneys, I should specify, have a very good understanding of immigration. And comparatively few immigration attorneys have a real good understanding of the effects of the criminal conviction. And there are very few people that come from either school that know much about the other.
But there are a few of us that actually have practiced. I was a long-term public defender before I started doing deportation defense. So I was a federal defender to start my career in San Diego. And I would see firsthand, they charge federal illegal reentry. That's actually a mm-hmm. federal crime. And actually, I think the Trump administration right now is considering there's a bill where it would make it a minimum mandatory. If you have an aggravated felony prior conviction, you'd serve 5 years, 5 years mandatory, 5 years in state prison for a federal illegal reentry.
And they did face quite a bit more, didn't they? I mean, now there's a mandatory minimum that he's trying to put in place. But to max somebody out in the guidelines, they could go quite a bit higher.
20 years is the max for the guidelines. And in fact, I had a long-term resident who pled to possession of possession of marijuana for sale. And that, again, that's considered a drug trafficking offense. That was an aggravated felony. And he was deported, and he came across the border back home. And the offer back then, this was in late 90s, so 1998, the offer was 30 months. And that sounded like crazy, like 30 months. I only did like a couple days for this offense. How am I going to get 30 months for a federal illegal reentry? And we went to trial, and it's quite easy to prove this offense, that you were previously deported, that you have a prior conviction, and you've come back illegally, and that you've come back without permission. And anyways, the client was sentenced to 10 years. So the consequences were quite dire. And that when I came to San Francisco and I became a public defender, I was always very aware that we had this obligation under this case that came down in 1987. And so it was always a passion of mine to make sure that our clients were properly advised. And then I had the opportunity in 2017 when Trump was first, when he first came into power, unfortunately, San Francisco, the public defender office there started an immigration unit. They have a deportation defense unit. And I was the only defense attorney that went, and I joined the deportation defense unit, which was immigration attorneys. And I learned immigration law. And it was in that capacity that I learned how to do post-conviction relief, because many of our clients were former lawful permanent residents. So they were not here without status. But they had committed a crime and had no idea that they were going to lose their status. And that's how they landed in ICE deportation proceedings. And I learned how to do post-conviction relief very quickly in order to save my clients. And I just have to highlight that, you know, John Halley is here, and he has been, you save lives when you do post-conviction relief. And he's extraordinary, and he has saved so many lives doing this work, because many people, when they return to a country that they've never, you know, they really, their lives are at risk, and also it leads to permanent separation. If you think about it, many of our lawful permanent residents and our longtime residents, they have U.S. citizen children. When that person is deported and they're left here, what happens to those children? Statistics show that they're more likely to end up in foster care and not be able to succeed without that parent, without that the financial and that emotional support. So again, this is good for our entire community, for our society. And that is what also the California legislature has recognized. And I just have to say one thing, and I want to ask this to John. John, does the district attorney have an obligation as well under the law to consider the immigration consequences? Is this only for defense attorneys?
No, the legislature enacted, and the governor signed, and it is the law that specifies that consideration of immigration consequences is part of the duty of the prosecution. It is doesn't create a enforceable right on the part of defendants, because it is merely a requirement that it be considered. It is not a requirement that a particular outcome be reached or a particular modification in their position be made. But it does bring everybody to the table. Everybody's got an interest as defined by law in trying to steer these things towards outcomes that avoid unnecessary immigration harm. Many times the only way to do that is to go to trial. Mm-hmm. That it's not the sort of case that the DA is going to make an offer that avoids immigration harm, and the defendant needs to know that and then can make a choice to actually take it to trial. But, you know, what I'd like to explain or sort of put this in the context of how a criminal record is ordinarily treated in California law and in California society. It's always been the case that prior convictions effectively go stale. They just become less and less important over time. A person who has a conviction from 2 years ago is different than a person who has a conviction that was suffered 20 years ago. California law recognizes that, and there's lots of mechanisms to, quote-unquote, expunge or to clear off your record, or in some cases to seal a record or to have a felony charged to a reduced to a misdemeanor. All those are great things, and everybody in the system participates and honors those procedures to give people some relief from the damage that a conviction does to them over time. In immigration, it's a completely different problem because there is no washout period for the damaging effect of a conviction in immigration. There's no such thing as a conviction that is too old for it to cause immigration harm. And all these mechanisms that California has for expunging or petitions to dismiss or to seal or all those things, they're wonderful. They can be effective in some and with respect to some issues. They're completely ineffective for immigration. Immigration authorities disregard all of those. So that people need to be aware of the distinction between getting what's called an expungement or a record clearance or what's called a 1203.4. Those things are nice and make you feel better in some cases, but they are worthless in immigration. And the kind of thing that we're talking about is a different process of going back and demonstrating that the conviction was legally invalid under either the constitutional rules that have existed for decades or under the much newer mechanisms that have been enacted specifically to cure these problems. So that's, the people doing the work that Carla and I are doing, we kind of have the wind at our backs now because the government in this state has made a decision to interfere with the use of California convictions by immigration authorities to produce results, namely deportations, that California, in fact, doesn't want to see happen. And California has gone out of its way to create procedures that will be effective in immigration and can force immigration to drop their case or to release somebody from immigration detention. So that's the kind of work that we're talking about here.
I just want to highlight one more thing, and that is that just along those same lines, and you kind of touched on it already, but the prosecutor in California does have an obligation to avoid the adverse immigration consequence. And if you read the entire Penal Code section, it's clear that the goal of the legislature was to avoid the adverse immigration consequence when possible. And many district attorney offices, especially here in the Bay Area, have policies where that is the goal. And unfortunately, there are other counties where they have refused to acknowledge that this law exists and to the day refuse to grant these immigration neutral offenses when at times as defense attorneys, and John, you know about this, we are asking for sometimes even a more serious offense, but we're trying to hold the person accountable, give the district attorney the same time, the same sentence, everything, just the charge, and they still refuse. And I just, just hopefully we can change those policies and hopefully find a way to give teeth to their obligation.
And this is where I want to pick it up when we come back for the second half hour. I did have a similar situation where the district attorney was very surprised that I pled up from possession for sale to the statute that covers transportation because it's the same as an actual sale, except that it covers other stuff that doesn't trigger deportation. But I want to pick that up when we come back. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
And I call 911. She's like, are you able to open the door for first responders? If not, they're going to have to break it down. Now I'm in the hallway, naked. I'm a broke college student. I don't have rehinge a door money.
Join us for stories of clean breaks. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
The Moth Radio Hour tonight at 7 o'clock on 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco, and online at KALW.org. And support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Law Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. KLW is your home for music discovery, as we're excited to present Lady Ray at the Chapel in San Francisco for an all-age show on Sunday, November 9th. Vocalist and songwriter Lady Ray pushes the boundaries of soul and R&B as she tours with her new album, Cover Girl, out September 26. Details on Lady Ray at the Chapel on Sunday, November 9th at kalw.org/presents.
So just to circle back, when a criminal defense attorney advises his or her client, we're supposed to talk to them about direct consequences and collateral consequences. If they're going to lose their housing, if they're going to lose their ability to ever take out a student loan for a young person, all of these things are something that the defense attorney is oftentimes required to learn about so they can give the proper advice. How does that correspond to immigration?
So just to be clear, defense attorneys are not obligated under the law to give consequences, like collateral consequences, because there are so many consequences of criminal convictions. So the courts have recognized, and the Supreme Court has recognized, that an immigration consequence is not a collateral consequence. In fact, it's a penalty. So it's more akin to a punishment. So for example, if you are a DACA recipient, you've lived here since you were a child, you received the deferred action under childhood arrival, and that person who's been here since they were a child pleads to a DUI. Normally a DUI just carries, it's a misdemeanor. You know, you have to take some classes, you do something with regard to the DMV, but it's a misdemeanor. It's not going to destroy your whole life. And in fact, for someone who has DACA, they are going to lose their status and they will be subject to deportation. So that is not a collateral consequence. It's not as if you suddenly don't have, you're no longer eligible for financial aid. That is serious, but this is, you are going to lose your entire life here in the United States for a relatively minor misdemeanor offense. So the United States Supreme Court in Padilla recognized how serious the immigration consequences, how dire they can be, and in fact said it was a penalty, not merely a collateral consequence.
John, you were talking before we broke, and Carla brought this up, but before we went on air, actually, you were talking about some of the different prosecutors' offices and how they handle these things. I don't want to dig into the weeds or necessarily get into what one Bay Area county does versus another in any great degree of certainty. But I have to ask you, you've researched some of these things. Are they on the same page?
You know, I don't have direct experience with all the counties around here, but it changes from county to county, and it changes within the same county from time to time. San Francisco had a policy that was pretty accommodating until fairly recently, and they made a change, and it's more difficult to get agreement. And some of the counties, the DA's offices have formed a dedicated unit to deal with the number of petitions that are coming in or motions that are coming in to try to get rid of old convictions to solve immigration problems. And they're very systematic about it. And it makes it counterpredictable, but I can also tell you all these guys are completely overwhelmed. Santa Clara has, I think, two people who are full-time dedicated to doing this work, but they have to keep, I think, putting in additional people to try to keep up, because the waiting period is, you know, the backlog they have is significant. And they also have to contend with attorneys who come in with a motion that need to cut in line because somebody is already in immigration proceedings and custody and has a final hearing coming. And if you're not one of those people, if your client isn't got that kind of urgency, you can remain at the end of the line for a while. I can't really explain and compare the policies or the practices of the different DA's offices. But I can tell you that, I've had good experience in San Mateo County. I should say something else about the way these things are handled, and that is these might look like a way to open a door and get rid of your conviction entirely, or it might look to outsiders who are not engaged in this at all that this is just a way for people who are not citizens to get a free pass and get rid of their convictions and to get a benefit that other people don't get. Well, this stuff is really addressed to convictions that in which people already did all of the penalty for their conviction. And now they're having an unintended disproportionate outcome many years later that they weren't warned about. And that's a separate problem that needs to be cured. And when I attack these things, I talk to an immigration lawyer and I get specific instructions about what is the minimum change I need to make in this conviction to solve the immigration problem. And that's the thing that I ask the DA to do. And in many cases, I can accept something that is functionally identical to the crime of which the person was convicted. Seems just as severe, has the same effect on their record. And I'll just make the modification to change the conviction from some kind of theft or embezzlement to a variety of burglary. And if you can believe it, because immigration law is so counterintuitive, burglary can be completely safe in immigration where embezzlement can be completely fatal in immigration. So our work isn't just giving people an unfair break and cleaning their record off in a way that citizens can't do. And it's also not just giving people a freebie and a mulligan to completely wipe out a conviction. In many cases, we wind up with a record that, for all California legal purposes, is identical to the one that was causing the huge immigration problem.
Or worse.
Yeah. In Los Angeles, I had a law for permanent resident client who was in deportation proceedings, had been here since he was 14 years old, pled to an offense that was an aggravated felony because it had a sentence of a year or more, and we were able to successfully vacate that conviction, but he did have to replead to a strike, and he hadn't pled to a strike. He had pled to a felony, but not a strike. And as you know, John, right, a strike carries very serious consequences under criminal law.
For life.
Yes, for life. And he did do that in order to order to get out from under the deportation proceedings. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're discussing post-conviction relief for non-citizens with tonight's guests, Carla Gomez and John Halley. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Once again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You don't have to jump into where we are in the conversation. You also don't have to worry about making a call here. Your telephone call is going to be reasonably safe. And John, you brought something up right before we went on the air about some people being very concerned about making these motions or drawing attention to themselves. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. This is, you know, I had a kind of bad experience with that recently. It often happens that people have lived with some conviction, they become aware that it exposes them to danger, and they're very worried that just by going back to court, they're going to make it worse. They're going to make themselves known to immigration authorities, and they're going to wind up being in a worse position for going to the California State Court to try to get rid of the conviction. Well, that's not really the case. And I've never had an experience in which making a challenge to an old conviction has initiated some action by immigration. And I had an experience a while ago where a kid called me up. He had a conviction. He knew it was a problem. We talked about it. He was trying to decide whether or not he would proceed and get me on the case. And then those conversations petered out until one morning I got a phone call from his girlfriend who reported he had just been taken into ICE custody right outside their front door. And the problem was still fixable, and I was able to fix it. But because he'd waited, it had to be fixed while he was in immigration custody. And it was a miserable experience for everybody. And the point being, don't wait. There's no risk created by going to talk to an attorney and hiring the attorney or getting a public defender appointed to go back into the California State Court to attack the conviction. It's completely harmless. You can't possibly make the case worse. And another thing that people ask is, well, if you go back and you attack the conviction and you reopen the case, well, what happens if the attorney, the DA, gets angry at me and wants to screw me even worse than he did the first time? And I wind up in having to fight the case all over again. I can assure you, there's never a moment in the case in which you're running that kind of risk without knowing it. In fact, almost all these cases can be resolved by just doing them correctly and carefully and getting the DA on board on a new safe modification of the plea. And if that agreement doesn't happen, and DAs do not always do what I tell them to do, then we can make a grown-up decision about, well, go to court, see if we can win the hearing, and then, you know, maybe you will have to fight the case again. But we'll make that, you're only going to jump into that if you are, you know, you're going to be fully advised of that before we expose you to that kind of danger. So these motions are completely safe to make. And if you or somebody you care about has an old conviction and is worried about this, just get up and do the work. Just make the phone call to an attorney or a public defender's office. And there are a lot of people who really enjoy this work. This is extremely gratifying work to do. And a lot of people really enjoy it, like Carla has devoted her life to doing this work. There are a lot of people out there who know how to fix these problems. So there's absolutely no reason not to do so.
Let me take this call from Carlos. You're on the line. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. My name is Carlos, and I have been here 53 years. I'm a resident, but I have a very old, 10 years at least, thing with the possession of marijuana. It was a little bit of marijuana they found, probably not mine, but anyway. So I have a misdemeanor. Meanwhile, I have applied for the expedited go-through with TSA. Obviously the FBI investigated, and I'm okay, and I got that. I have my new green card, but still I'm a little afraid of traveling to Spain, where I'm from.
Yeah, Carlos. Is it Carlos?
Yeah.
Sorry. So what county is this out of?
I live in Sonoma County, but right now I'm in San Francisco.
No, where did the conviction arise out of? What county?
In Sonoma County. Yeah.
So Sonoma County has a Padilla attorney. I recommend that you call the Sonoma County Public Defender's Office. You can easily vacate that conviction. I am certain that anyways, I recommend that you call that office, the public defender's office there, and you can vacate the conviction. And I agree that you should vacate the conviction.
And
great. Thank you.
Let me just add a fun fact about this thing. California has done a lot of work, and the California government's done a lot of work to try to minimize the damage done by old convictions. And they blessedly made a decision to decriminalize a lot of marijuana offenses and then even go further and seal the records or even destroy them. And that also is available and in many cases automatically applied. The sealing process happens for anybody who successfully completed probation, which sounds great. And if you go onto a court's website and you try to look up yourself in your old case, you'll happily find it's not even in the system anymore, as though it doesn't exist. But lo and behold, immigration authorities don't care about that. And the same court clerk's office that will seal your record and won't let you have a copy of it will instantly hand it over to immigration when immigration writes a letter saying, please give us the marijuana conviction from Carlos from 12 years ago. So don't be deceived. The fact that the conviction has been, quote-unquote, sealed and doesn't appear in the court record, it's still completely accessible to immigration, and they will go ahead and use it. But your attorney at the public defender's office or an attorney that you hire knows how to fix that little problem and can get the record and still get the case back into the courtroom and get it taken care of.
Yeah.
Carlos, should you want to use the public defender in Sonoma County, their phone number is 707-565-2791. By coincidence, I was there just yesterday morning. 707-565-2791.
Fortunately, I'm looking for a pen, and I don't have one. I always have one.
You can look it up online, and they have a Padilla attorney. They have a crim immigration attorney. Crim immigration attorneys were called Padilla lawyers after the famous United States Supreme Court case, Padilla versus Kentucky. We meet every Wednesday, and he is a part of the call. So they have a very good person there, and you could reach out to that person. Just ask to ask.
This Padilla group. Are they available for hire as regular attorneys?
No, it won't cost you anything. It won't cost you anything. You should just talk to the attorney there. They can give you a consult. And then there's a very good person who, if there's any conflict with the public defender office, they have a great person there in Sonoma County who does this on a sliding scale. She doesn't charge very much. Should I just give out her name?
Yeah, sure.
Her name is Heather Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. She's great. I one of my first cases that I vacated for one of my clients was out of Sonoma County, and she was very, very helpful. She's fantastic. I think you'll be fine. And in many jurisdictions, I had a similar case. A client of mine had a very similar conviction. Out of Kern County, like Stockton. It was out of Stockton. What county is that? Anyway, so it's Stockton. And San Joaquin, sorry. San Joaquin County. So not like a super, traditionally very conservative. We were able to vacate, and they did not make the client replead to anything. So don't be afraid. Just take care of it. And don't let it linger, because for immigration purposes, marijuana is still on the federal schedule. So it could definitely cause you problems, especially if you travel outside of the United States and try to come back. But it I don't want to scare you, but you should definitely reach out right away.
Something else to mention with respect to the, people's concerns about going into court about this. You hear in the media a lot that ICE is going into courthouses. All us attorneys, all defense attorneys and immigration attorneys are worried about that. It's been happening in Southern California. It has not happened at all that I'm aware of in San Mateo County. And once you talk to an attorney, they'll be able to tell you in that particular county, is there any possibility that ICE is going to be lurking around the hallways? And
if it is, if they are, and Sonoma County is a tough jurisdiction, meaning that there is ICE enforcement in Sonoma County, you don't even have to appear for either the vacature, so to vacate it, and you can always do something. You don't even have to appear for the, if they're going to make you replead to something, you don't have to appear. So there's ways to do this without even coming to court ever. And most of my clients were detained and never made it to court, and we were able to successfully vacate very serious convictions, and this is very not a serious conviction. Just take care of it. The lawyer clearly didn't advise you and didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Carlos, if all else fails, every county bar has a lawyer referral service. Every county in the state has either the public defender or the private defender program. They're all networked. There's people out there to help. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. And thank you for joining us in your legal rights. Let me turn it to Pete. Pete, welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you. You know, I was reflecting on myself in the sense, like, how do I know that I'm a citizen? Because at the beginning of the show, you mentioned a person who came over. He was 3 months old. His parents brought him in, and he didn't know he wasn't a citizen. And I was just trying to think, it's like, at what point do you start encountering things that makes you aware that you're not a citizen? For instance, I remember as a little kid, my mother made me memorize my Social Security number. You're going to need this throughout your life, you know. And then, sure enough, I did. You know, I'm just doing various things throughout life. So I'm just wondering this: how many people out there really can be in that same situation of coming into the country when they're 3 years old? They don't know they're not citizens. Aren't they going to bump into situations that are going to make them aware that, like I said, anything from not having a Social Security card?
You make a very good point. And I don't think I think it's unusual that someone would think that they're a U.S. citizen, but they're not. Because normally it happens when someone turns 16. And I had a client came here as a child and thought they were a U.S. citizen, but he wanted his driver's license. And so sure enough, he asked his mom, you know, I want to get a driver's license. And that's when he learned for the first time that he was not a citizen. And that, in fact, he was undocumented. So you're right. Normally, you confront at a certain point, you learn that you need something. And that's how many young people find out.
And knowing, do most people know where they were born? Like, I know I was born, you know, everyone knows their birthday and say, and this hospital. And you can call that hospital and probably find out. Do you have records? Or maybe in the county, whatever, Board of Records for Manhattan County. Is it easy for most people to find out at the, you know, just with a phone call? Like, was I born there?
How reliable do you want the information to be? And ultimately, there are certain things we take for granted. We don't question the source of the evidence when we say what our name is, even though the fact is, your name was established when you weren't really having a whole lot of input.
Right.
The same would be true for your birthday. We all take it for granted. We know what our birthday is and what our birthplace is, but do we really know?
Yeah, it's all hearsay. There's actually a hearsay exception so that you can, the information of this kind can be admissible. It goes the other way around, too. Sometimes people come in thinking they're not citizens, and lo and behold, a skilled immigration attorney may determine that you don't know it yet, but you've been a citizen since such and such an event.
You were 8 years old when your parents became citizens, and lo and behold,
I have no idea what the mechanism is, but that
happens. That's right. There's something called derivative citizenship. So, for example, if your grandmother is a citizen, then you would derive citizenship from your grandparents. You can derive citizenship from your parents. So if you were born out of the country, but your parents are U.S. citizens, you would derive citizenship. And many times, it's true, individuals don't know it. And so that's why, as PDEA attorneys, as the criminal immigration attorney for the San Mateo PDP, we screen for that. We ask every non-citizen client, where was your grandmother born? Where were your parents born? And if they naturalized, when did they naturalize? Because if they became U.S. citizens before you were 18, then you also derive that citizenship.
And lo and behold, you found out that your grandmother was a citizen, and you now can compete in the Olympics.
There you go. Thank you.
Peter, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to your calls every week. Although that one ended abruptly. We have just a couple minutes left, and one thing I wanted to ask you, Carla, if you would summarize really quickly. Can you tell us what an aggravated felony is? We talked about it, but we didn't really define it.
Well, an aggravated felony, again, this is, we don't have that much time, and this could be a whole hour lecture, what is an aggravated felony, but it is a term of art. And under the Immigration and Nationality Act, an aggravated felony carries the most draconian immigration consequences. And in 1996, it was expanded to include convictions that are neither aggravated, so they don't have to be very serious, and they don't have to be felonies. So, for example,
or at least not felonies as the home state, such as California, would define them.
Correct. And normally, so for example, the example I was giving was the cultivation of marijuana. That is considered a drug trafficking offense. That is an aggravated felony. And the consequences for the aggravated felony convictions are very severe. They include mandatory ICE detention, which again means you cannot bond out. Mandatory deportation, which means that the judge has no discretion to consider your ties to the United States, how old the conviction is, how serious the conviction was, and they must deport you. And then it is a lifetime banishment, so there's no like washout period like John was talking about. It's a lifetime banishment. And then if you come back into the country illegally, then you're subject to federal illegal reentry, which carries a term of 20 years. So very, very serious consequences for aggravated felonies, which can be as minor as a theft offense with a sentence of 1 year or more.
You know, I would love to go on because there's a lots more material that we can cover, but we have basically ran out of time. I told you each I would give you a brief period for any last minute thoughts. John, why don't you start? Take up to a minute.
You know, this is essentially just a recap of things I already said. This is completely opaque area of the law. You need to get professional advice. Even the criminal defense attorneys need to get professional advice about immigration. And that's why we talk about this hybrid crimmigration attorney, a person like Carla, who has done both criminal and immigration work. You just need to reach out to somebody who does this kind of work, and you can get a reliable answer, and you can make an informed decision. And in almost all cases, if there's an avenue if you come within these statutes, you can get the problem fixed. Most of these problems do get fixed. So I would just strongly encourage people to set aside their fears long enough to make a call to either a private attorney or a public defender and get to work on this problem.
Carla, we're almost out of time. Can you give us a real quick, would you care to make any last minute statement for a moment or two?
Just to stress what John said, don't waste any time. I have vacated convictions in over 10 counties throughout California in very conservative jurisdictions. If you have a good lawyer who can explain why, you know, what the problem was and explains, you know, the compelling story, 9 times out of 10, district attorneys will agree to vacate the conviction. And if not, you go to hearing and you can have a hearing. We've also won at hearings as well. We've also had full-blown hearings in Los Angeles, for example. So please don't be afraid. Please reach out to an attorney.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been discussing conviction relief for non-citizens. Our guests tonight have been Carla Gomez of the Private Defender Program of the San Mateo County Bar Association and Redwood City Attorney John Halley. Thank you both for joining us. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we try to answer the question, is DEI dead in the workplace? And as always, we take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guests, to all of you for listening. And at the controls, D minor followed by Marla Davies. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe, have a great night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Thank you.